Hey y'all, what's up? Welcome to a new episode of What's Up with Danny. We appreciate you listening. It's your first episode. Thanks for joining. We hope you like it. If it's your second, third, fourth, fifth, 100th episode, I can say that now. We are in triple digits. Thanks for coming back. We appreciate you checking us out time and time again. My apologies for no new episode last week. Won't really go into details, but yeah, we kind of missed the beat on this particular week, but we should be getting right back to doing week-to-week episodes. Please send positive vibes over to Andy's family in this time as part of the reason why we didn't get an episode out last week. Much love to him and his family right now. Anywho, exciting stuff. This episode is the first episode that we posted the video for. If you head to our YouTube channel, you can check it out there. We have video. We have gone video in addition to being able to listen. So you can check out the link in our information for this, and you can check it out. You can watch it. How cool is that? Not only can you listen, but you can see. You can see what we look like talking. What are the odds? Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while. We finally got it up and running, so it's very exciting. We are very excited. Please check it out. Today's guest for number 102 is none other than musician Jude Lally from Jude Lally and the Flux. We chatted a couple weeks back. It was a great conversation. Loved having Jude. We got to talking about music, him coming up here from Alabama to jam and meet musicians and get acquainted with the West Michigan scene, what that was like for him. And we just, we basically talk shop. We talk about music and everything that's great about it. I really sound like a guy who remembers what we talk about or what talked about, don't I? The episode was a few weeks ago. Cut me some slack. Great episode. Jude, if you're listening, thank you again for giving us your time. We really appreciate it. You can listen to Jude Lally and the Flux. The link is in the information. Make sure you check them out on the internet. I don't really know what else to say. Oh, I'm totally skipping over all the promo. Jeez, wow, I'm off my game today. You make sure you rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd really appreciate it. Share us with a friend, whatever you feel is necessary. A little goes a long way, so we appreciate it. If you do that, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/whatsupwithdanny, Instagram, at whatsupwithdannypodcast, and as well on YouTube, whatsupwithdannypodcast over there. You can shoot us an email, whatsupwithdannypod@gmail.com. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or anything along the lines of that. Big things. We're rolling. Anywho, go ahead and check out Tim. We will be at the Pyramid Scheme on May 28th with Crooked Spires and a few other bands for Crooked Spires release show. And you can also see Hexing at the Pyramid Scheme in Grand Rapids on July 9th. We'll be playing with Years Later and Seaholm. And there's another band on that bill whom I'm forgetting at the moment. But I have tickets for both of those. That was the sound of a paper towel ripping, if you're wondering what that sound was. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode with Jude Lally, and have a great week, everybody.
Well, we're live.
Are we? We're good live. To go? Wow, we're recording to go. And everything? Amazing. Which one's
first,
my camera?
First no, video kidding. Podcast.
This is exciting.
Do you feel special?
Yeah, I do.
Hell yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you for doing this. I wanted to open just with a quick story that I have told on the podcast before, but it's something I think about often and it makes me laugh a lot. But when Tim played with you guys last fall, I believe, this is a little while ago, but we played it Unruly. It was us, you guys, and I want to say Short Hair played. Is that right? Does that sound about right?
That sounds right. Man, yeah. My memory's terrible.
Yeah, I, for some reason, I can remember band lineups really well, but everything else in my life, I never seem to remember. I don't know what it is. But anyway, I think the show was over. Both our bands had played, and we were just chatting, or maybe we were waiting for a band to set up. I don't know. But we were just kind of chatting, and I think it was you, and it might have been your drummer, whose name I can't remember.
Zach,
yeah, Zach. Yep. And we were chatting, and we were talking about the bands and everything. And at one point, I think you had asked me, it might have been your drummer. I don't remember which one of you guys asked me, but you had said, oh, what kind of happened with Tim? I thought you guys went on like a little hiatus or something about your bass player or whatever. And I thought it was really funny, but I casually just sort of dropped the line. I was like, oh, yeah, our bass player died. And I could 100% tell how uncomfortable it made you guys. So first off, I'd like to apologize for making you guys uncomfortable in that moment.
No.
But the hilarity of it was I knew I was making a joke, and so I just kind of leaned into it, like the conversation where I was like, oh, they didn't take it as a joke. Let's just keep talking like normal or whatever.
Right.
And then I walked away, and I immediately went and pulled Trevor and Will, Trevor's the singer. Mm. And they both immediately laughed, just started cracking up after I told them what had happened. And I still think about it to this day once in a while. It just makes me laugh. But I did want to open with that and say, I'm sure you don't remember that moment happening at all.
That was told to me by somebody else in the band. You definitely didn't tell me really? That directly okay. because my cool. reaction was in the same vein, and I felt Fair. Bad for laughing. I was laughing at how quickly it was told to me in such a casual way.
Hilarious. Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was like, I hope that story gets told amongst the rest of the band. I remember thinking that, and then, cool. I'm glad to know that it was.
Oh, yeah,
cool.
it was. No,
very
no,
cool.
No worries. Oh.
But yeah, I think about it all the time, and I was like, oh, this would be the perfect time for me to bring that up and just kind of air it out, I guess.
No, I dig it. Thank you.
Yeah, because, yeah, I felt like they reacted as though it had happened yesterday. And we were still sort of grieving over it. Not to say that we're still not devastated by the fact that it happened, but like, you know, time and whatever, you know, as things pass. But just something I wanted to open up with today to sort of like break the ice, I guess, a little bit. But, but yeah, so that was my fun story.
Oh, that was great.
Cool. Well, like I said, thank you again. So this is a podcast where we talk to people about their passions and what got them there. Hmm. And you're a musician. That tends to be a lot of what we talk about on this show. So what we're going to do is we're just going to start off with something real easy. We'll go with what kind of gave you your itch to sort of start playing music, or where you were influenced to sort of pick up an instrument and kind of find your way through music. So we'll start off with that. Just give us a quick little intro.
Sure.
Or it could be a long intro. It doesn't really matter.
I always say I'll try to keep it brief, and then it never goes that way. So
that's great.
I will try to keep it brief. Good start. I started playing music like 13, 14-ish years ago. I don't know how long 2007 was from here, but
yeah, seems right. Yeah.
Somewhere in that, it always starts with Guitar Hero in some way or another. that was, Guitar Hero 2, and I just wanted to play guitar really, really badly. Mm. Grandfather got me a guitar, wasn't as good as I wanted to be at guitar, and then I saw my friend at the time introduced me to Metallica, like early Metallica, and then I saw Cliff Burton. I was like, I want to do that, and so swapped a bass, and then ever since that point, it's been strictly like I love the super weird, taboo-y bass players, I guess, when it like just distortion bass. That might not be, it's obviously not that taboo anymore, but like Royal Blood, kind of. Like, you know who that is?
I'm not too familiar.
That's like a drum and bass duo, but the bassist, who's also the singer, uses strictly distortion, and it's like it's just him and the drummer, and or Chris Squire from Yes, kind of stuff. Just playing the bass like a guitar. And that might be kind of a cop-out, too, because, yeah, I wasn't really that good at guitar, but, like, bass was definitely, like, you know, obviously easier. It's just bass players, realistically. I think that, I don't know if that fully answers the question, but, like, the passion for that really did come from Guitar Hero, guitar, not good at guitar. Saw a bass player liked. I want to see if there's a ton more like this, and there's a shitload. Nice. So, bass players. Mm-hmm. Weird bass players.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of had the same thing where, like, I got introduced to guitar and tried to learn a little bit of guitar, and I'm like, I'm not good at this. And then someone's like, why don't you try to play bass? I'm like, oh, okay. And then I figured out how much more easier it was. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this is more my speed. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like, I mean, do you still play guitar outside of bass? Do you think playing bass maybe helped you kind of break the ice a little bit with the guitar maybe? Or work up to a different level?
By a lot. Guitar? By a lot. Because the trying to understand guitar at a point like where you're just completely green is never that fun starting out, like taking lessons. I mean, that's the stereotypical thing that, you know, it gets boring. You know, you obviously start out with like, hey, I want to learn that song. And then the guitar teacher is already irritated with that thought, like, hey, you need to learn a chord maybe first or something. But yeah, as time passed and like, because I don't know why that interest was just more peaked when I got on bass. Like, it just seemed so like less pressure. Sure. To actually learn on bass and than it was on guitar. And then, you know, after a while, you just start mixing the techniques over to guitar with, like, what you know briefly about the guitar. Mm-hmm. In short, yes, that did break the ice quite a bit to actually get better at playing the guitar and different instruments as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think I was mature enough to actually sit down and learn at the time. I just wanted this thing now. So, yeah.
Do you think, because for me, I learned guitar. That was my first instrument. And I don't play bass very often. Like, I don't have a bass to play. But in the times that I have played bass, I've found it to be easier than playing guitar. But I've also, like, I find it to be more fun in a way. Is that something, like, do you feel like when you see a guitar player who, you know, is however good at guitar or whatever, they maybe play a bass, do they seem like they're having more fun that when they play bass than when they play guitar?
Typically always is the case. Yeah. Like Elijah Russ, you know who that is?
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing with him. Like, I've seen him play bass several times, and that's a comment he's said to me is that you do have more fun because it's just you. There could be two guitar players. There could be three guitar players. There's always only going to be just one guy. You might be conflicting with a keyboard player, maybe, but you can just explore so much more. And like I said, with less pressure and in certain ways. I mean, obviously, as you start to upgrade and stuff, the bass can be obviously really, really hard, just like any other instrument.
Sure,
but
yeah.
It makes it easier to get into other things or just stick to the bass. Or my friend Nate Dill. Same thing with him is that he's a very prolific guitar player, but he just got like his first bass recently so he could record his own demos. And he says like, yeah, I have a lot of fun just, you know, exploring it a little bit, you know, and trying to not play it as a guitar player too.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think so.
See, and I should say this because I know some bass player out there heard me say that playing bass was easier and they just probably hate me now for having said it. But I should say, when I say easier, I mean just kind of noodling around and being able to figure it out versus playing the guitar. There are people who I watch play a bass and I'm like, oh, I could never do that. There's no way. Like, but because I have a hard time finger picking and then seeing people just kind of bounce through, I'm like, oh, there's no way I could ever do something like that. So for people listening, when I say that, I'm not saying bass is so easy. Anybody could pick up a bass and just play it, because there's definitely levels similar to guitar. Like, anybody could learn chords or learn a scale, but like, I would think of a guitar player like Nate, who is incredible at guitar, and that's to a different level, similar to, I've seen you play bass and I'm like, oh, there's a different level to this, like.
Thank you, you know what I mean? That's
but,
cool.
Yeah, there was a point that I was going for somewhere with the question there, and I just started talking. So, Bill,
that's
going
to happen to me a lot.
I'm going to circle back to it.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about some of your first projects. I mean, when you start to play, I mean, are you doing your own thing? Or are you getting into bands? Like, did you have any real want to even play in a band when you were first starting out?
Oh, yeah. Like, I really, really liked that connection. That, like, because I was so insecure at that point in my life where, like, there was a group of friends where, like, I knew I was totally the background character in this TV show, you know, kind of thing. And that was fine. At least you were part of it. Sure. But when I discovered that they all played guitar shittily, we all did, mm-hmm. but, like, I also wanted to, like, we should make a band. And it was just nothing but four guitar players. So that just really, like, somebody had to, like, step and do something else. Like, can you get a drum kit and that kind of thing? But, yeah, like, it was just trying to find some, I know that's cheesy, but, like, some identity with it. Sure. And, you know, even when they were getting better, because they actually wanted to learn how to play guitar, the fact that I had learned a couple chords, and I'm like, I'll be the rhythm guy. Like, I'll be a rhythm guitar player. Like, I thought it was cool that our chords just, I have no idea what I'm doing, but we accidentally connected, and it was just octave up. I was like, yeah, you know, we're helping each other. We're part of a unit in some way, and I was totally fine with being secondary and stuff, but, like, I wanted to actually get more serious as time passed, especially when I swapped over to bass with, like, okay, I wonder how I'll feel about writing lyrics and singing. And that, ooh, that was a doozy to start with, too. That was, I mean, that it was fun because, like, that really does break you out of that. The singing jitters is actually just going on stage and not doing it well by any means. I mean, I had a blast doing it. So then I kind of skipped over being scared singing in front of people because of just diving into it that way.
Right.
And then it got more and more to the point where, like, okay, I am writing a lot of lyrics. We are singing a lot, playing a lot for where I was. Like, I'm from Alabama, so there was, like, no, like, if you got 3 gigs a year, you were, like, you know, that was pretty cool. But, like, yeah, I always really, really wanted, like, my own thing. I did not care about playing covers. I really, really didn't care about playing covers because at the time I didn't know how important that was either. We didn't have enough gigs to, you know, where they need you to play a 3-hour set, you know, do stuff like that. And then that's also why I moved to Michigan because I wanted to get even more serious. I knew the music was like night and day up here. And then that's where I started learning more and more. Like, you need to be in a cover band. You need to maybe teach. You need to maybe do solo stuff or busking. And then you have your original stuff on the side that's just sort of subtly building over time.
Sure.
I've definitely always it, no, and there's been a ton of bands too, like, you know, whether they last a week or a year, you know, it goes. Mm-hmm. And but I if this one breaks down, it's on to the next one. Like, I've got to have a band. Mm. For sure.
Nice. What's made you, I mean, are you, did you always kind of settle once you moved to Michigan, did you settle on Muskegon, or were there other places within the state that you played in before, or was it like you made the move from Alabama right to Muskegon, or were you, you know, kind of elsewhere?
No, it was because I didn't have a clue. Sure. and stuff, and stereotypically I thought, because I'd never left Alabama for realistically any reason. I came up here with, like, weird ambivalence because I have one friend that in Alabama that lived, or he was from Indianapolis, and he was really, 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 really smart. So I'm like, I think everybody in the North is like that. When I came up here, I was like, why are there rednecks? That's an Alabama thing. Like, that really threw me for a loop. Just on a side note.
Sure.
So with having no knowledge of the North in general, realistically, let alone the musical, I just knew that the music was good up here because my grandparents, the ones that I moved up here with, had been living here for a while, and they said, yeah, the music's really good up here, you know, it's something you might want to look into and playing, and, like, can I just move up there with you and start from there? And I mean, I was just going to that when they had that firehouse in Muskegon. I was just going there and trying to look at the bulletin board just to see if somebody needed, like, a bass player for a while. But yeah, I had no idea what Grand Rapids was. You know, I was scared to go to Grand Rapids because the only thing I had to do with Grand Rapids was I had a doctor's appointment, and I hated driving here for that, so I didn't know that there was a big musical boom. You know, everybody likes beer. There's a ton of breweries. I didn't know nothing about that, so I really didn't have any direction at that point, and thank God for that bulletin board, because that's how I met Nate, and then it went from there. So, and he's lived here all his life, so he knew what direction to take me in, so.
Mm-hmm. What, I guess once you started playing, and once you did start to sort of sink yourself in with the music scene around here, what are your first impressions, and what are you kind of learning over time, as you're getting the feel for the community in the scene?
There's a lot of clicks. I'll say that. Yeah, there's always.
I love that answer. Sorry, not to interrupt you, but I just love that answer. Continue.
Because it's kind of honest. I mean, there's never, ever going to be a shortage of inner circles with music, you know, bands around a certain area, I mean. And I think that was maybe the first thing I really should have learned was that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is and it isn't, but more or less, that's just part of it. I mean, if you're really good and passionate about something, it's like the video gaming community. There's the ones that like, hey, I don't care if you play on very easy or super hard. You play the game that you want to play, how you want to play it, because it makes you happy. And then there's the ones that are like, you know, like, oh, you're playing on medium or something. Right. You didn't beat Halo on Legendary. What's wrong with you? You know, like that kind of thing. And it's kind of like that. You get the rarities, the rare musicians that they're with you. They support, you know, whether they bought an album, didn't listen to it, but they did it just to help you or something. And then you got the other ones that kind of give you the cold shoulder. But the way I handled that when I first got here was maybe not the best way I should have handled it. It was still pretty immature on my part, because I just didn't like the feeling of being left out again, you know. Sure. And I know you got to earn, you know, your keep with some of these venues and even some musicians, some studios, maybe. But trying to learn how to be mature about that and weeding out kind of like, maybe don't play with that band, or maybe don't work with this person based off of merit alone. That was maybe the first thing, realistically, that's still kind of growing today. And secondly, the impression, which is way more positive, like super, super, super diverse. That's, again, probably stereotypical to say, but and everybody eats it up. It doesn't matter what genre and how crappy you play it, there's an audience for everybody in some way or another. And and even if there's only two people at that venue, there's one guy that's like, whoo, like super, super into it.
Yeah.
And that's the guy you want coming back, you know, for sure. So, I mean, it's weird. It's, like I said, clicky. But, yeah, there's a lot of different type of music, and people nail it. So. Right.
Yeah. I love your answer, because we've had that discussion several times about what people think the scene is like, or what their impressions of the scene was like. And everyone's always kind of alluded to the idea that it was real clicky. Some people have just outright said clicky and didn't really give an explanation like how you did. But I think it is an honest answer, because it, you know, just like any other scene, it can be very clicky. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but I have had conversations with other musicians where there's some resentment that gets built up here and there. You know, some bands, they get the better show, or they have the better crowd for some reason, which ultimately, to me, I think if you're upset about the size of your crowds, I think you need to reflect more inward versus reflecting outward and putting it on like a band that might be more successful. Whatever success is different for everybody. But the idea, I think, is to be, if it's a little bit clicky, maybe it's not that bad, because there's still room for everybody.
Oh,
at the same time, you know what I mean?
And I'm not trying to say like it's just full poison, you know, around
sure,
here.
Sure, sure.
You got to have some clicky inner circles. You got to. I don't know why it doesn't fully help fuel your passion, but it kind of like gives you that little extra like, you know, like I want to maybe get a little better than these people. But, you know, a lot of that stuff is incidental. You know, if these bands have a crowd, there's a reason for it.
Sure.
You know, because you can only pay for followers so many times, you know, that doesn't reflect to physical bodies being in the room at these shows. Like, if you have these people here and you're going to badmouth the band that, you know, got them here. I mean, yeah, and all of us are just like, yeah, fuck those guys. You know, like, that. You know, some of them, that's fine. That's standard, you know, and if you've never done that, then I guess good for you. But, like, I mean, there's supposed to be that sibling rivalry with bands. There's, you just kind of have it, you know. I think it's good.
Yeah, and I think I've noticed too over time, because right now, I mean, there's not very many places to play within the town. You know, there's like maybe Unruly and I don't know, a couple handful that pop up here and there, But I think when there's only one place to go for music, that helps.
You give it that Beatles treatment, yeah.
Like, I could go to Unruly any given week, and I could see Flex the Decibel, or I could see Sky King. Maybe not so much now, but I could have seen Sky King, or, you know, Tim would play there. I could go to the Showcase and see 10 different acts, you know what I mean? Just, like, I think having one spot where the community can sort of gather for art helps sort of take away from that clickiness maybe a little bit, mm-hmm. where... Like, I'll go to Unruly any given night, and I'll just watch the show. And I might not love every band, but I'll watch everybody, and there's something to that. There's something beautiful about that, to just be able to watch music, you know, have mm-hmm. an outlet for that. How... I think, basically, what I'm getting at is, how do you think that clickiness has sort of affected your play overall? Like you mentioned... Well, I maybe want to get a little bit better than this band. Or, like, do you use it to inspire you or light a fire under you when you go to see a band from around town and they might be just on that night, or you see a band that's playing well? Does it kind of inspire you to pick up, you know, a little bit on your own playing?
It does now. Mm-hmm. When I first got here, no. That's mm-hmm. that's what I was trying to say, is that I am blaming myself fully mm-hmm. for how I reacted to sure. what I saw mm-hmm. off the bat. And that's never a good trait to have, just seeing something from that hindsight. And yeah, there's still some stuff I stand behind with, like, okay, maybe just avoid that person altogether. Sure. And that's a very rare thing. Like, I'm not at all trying to say, again, that this is just full of toxic people. I don't want to say that there isn't, you know, at all. But because it's the same thing with venues, you know, there's clicky venues and they're toxic left and right, but maybe even more than the musicians are. The first thought was I used it just to be salty and just to make myself feel better for my lack of what I had. And then as years went on and conversations later, for sure, that it turned to what it is now, where yes, it is more of a light a fire under you a little bit to get better and see what you can do with that. Because yeah, there's a lot of pretty big groups around here, like locally speaking, and mm-hmm. you know, like Patty Prashala and the Mayhaps, mm-hmm. you know, that and look at what she's doing now. She's yeah. singing for Why Not. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool. And then Nate Walton's pretty popular, and everybody knows Elijah and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's some heavy hitters, and you want to be a heavy hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of saying, like, fuck those guys. It's just, like, you want to be that a little bit, you know. Like, and then going back with that Unruly thing, too. Yeah, I think that is, like, it makes you feel special because it is a very nice venue. Mm-hmm. And, but, like, they make it to where anybody can get it. It's not some grotesque, you need all this under your belt in order to play here type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not get, like, on the Showcase. I mean, I like that they have some stuff that you can work towards.
Sure.
You know, but anybody can go in there and play, and it's not some crappy little hole in the wall. You know, it kind of gives you, like, oh, it feels like I'm playing at Founders, you know, sure. but good luck with that.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. pretty tough, and I'm over it, you know, but, like, yeah, like, there's still, like, venues like that that make you feel special, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing, so just wanted to add that part.
For sure. Yeah, I do like, there is that weird, yeah, the Showcase, if you get in on that and you play that a few times, you know, that might work your way into a feature spot mm-hmm. on the Showcase, which could, you know, work your way into your own headline. Now, I think... We've all, now that we're kind of in bands, I always feel like it's important to acknowledge, because there are probably people listening who are in bands that maybe can't get a show at Unruly now. We might be able to get shows at Unruly, but we did kind of work towards that. Yeah. It wasn't an immediate, like, oh, hey, can we play at Unruly? Well, you know, maybe get a bill with you to pair with you, or, like, maybe try the Showcase, hit up Brett to play the Showcase a couple times, and then we'll
but
see.
But it's nice that you have options, but, you know, because in some places, it's like, yeah. it's an arm and a leg just to get the guy's email.
Exactly.
Of whoever said guy is.
Sure.
You know, but mm-hmm. yes, it is, again, nice to have, like, we've been doing this for a few years at Unruly, you know, you have that little merit to you, mm-hmm. you know, that, so, yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No worries. I appreciated your point. Tell me, let's take a couple steps back a bit and tell me about the first show you ever played. Do you remember the sensations that you were feeling, maybe some nervousness, maybe a little excitement? Tell me what was going through your head before the show, and then we'll kind of turn that into what was going through your head during and after as well.
Like first ever?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that being that vocal thing I was talking about, mm-hmm. like I had never sung mm-hmm. in front of people before. And before the show, I thought I was hot shit. And she's seen the video too. There's a video of it, and it is, that's a doozy. For sure. Band didn't have a clue. Nothing was in tune, and the drummer is like the busiest guy in the world. So it was for my drummer at the time, obviously in Alabama, his birthday. And his mom, just on a side note, made T-shirts that said rock and roll. And they were white and black. And we took a marker and like wrote the band, and the band's name was Ledbetter at the time, and wrote, we didn't have a logo, we just made one, and it was an X, and it said Ledbetter. And just on a side note, my shirt was too big, so I just looked weird. It was just like Billie Eilish for some reason kind of thing. And we all three, it was a three-piece, like just had these matching white shirts with very poorly drawn logos on them. And it was just a bunch of like 14, 16-year-olds, you know, just hanging out in this backyard. And they had gotten this trailer to set the band on. So the drummer was here, I was in the middle, and then the guitar player. So you also can't hear anything going on. I mean, at that point, you don't know anything about stage volume or nothing. Like, you can't get any of this stuff set up. So stuff's just feedbacking things. Some stuff's not working. And I'm, like, out of time left and right. Like, super out of time. And I think I'm still just nailing it. Even on stage, like, I still felt pretty good. I thought, like, okay, there's a lot of people here, there's a lot of girls, you know, that kind of thing. So I felt good in the moment. And even when I was singing badly, which I can't really tell that I'm singing badly, I still thought it was great until we got to one section and I did the stereotypical countdown vocally loudly, and my voice like cracked, like so bad. Like, even in that moment, the crack was so bad, I thought I was going to get a nosebleed. It was so, so bad. And, like, I was eating, like, Skittles and drinking Coca-Cola and stuff, too, before Ooh. Singing for the first time. That was not good. When we got done with the set, I still felt pretty good. And we went to Waffle House afterwards. And, you know, I thought, and then Ethan showed me the video back. And, like, I don't want to say my confidence went down, but perspective was a little different for mm-hmm. sure. The first show sucked. We're just gonna leave it. It really, really sucked. I'm really, really glad I did it, because mm-hmm. like I said, at least I got over that vocal hump. Sure. And then in the gigs that followed, the vocal stuff didn't get any better. It did not get any better. But yeah, a lot of just perspective. Sure. I thought it was hot shit, and I got kicked pretty hard by a camera phone video. So, yep.
See, and I love that story too, because imagine if you hadn't seen that video. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had gone to Waffle House that night, not been shown that video, and going into the next show, I mean, there's a chance you don't figure out that it maybe didn't sound as good as you thought.
Right.
You know, and you keep playing like that, and maybe it doesn't encourage you to get better, you know, or maybe it doesn't put that in your mind, like, oh, there's still work to be put in, you know. Do you ever think about that? Or that maybe was that in your head at the time, where you're like, oh, no, we have got a little ways to go still?
Are you saying currently? Or
Not so much currently, but I guess at that time. Like for your second show, did you find yourself with that same feeling of like, oh yeah, no, we got this. This is gonna be fine. We're hot shit to put it in the same way that you did.
I guess so, because the vocals didn't get any better. Sure. Like, I guess I didn't really analyze it until now. Mm-hmm. You know, the like how badly that way. It just was such a gradual increase of getting better. You know, because I still don't think I'm like the great, like a great singer. I just sing by default, and I like to. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I don't, you know, go home and just like with bass, I don't practice vocal warm-ups or anything like that. Mm. I try to take some stuff from people who are good singers and have this training, and they tell me these little tips and tricks. And yes, I definitely apply those nowadays. And always, always, always just instinctively watch my videos back just to see, okay, don't do that. That was fine. Nowadays, at that time, let me backtrack. Sorry. With not going home and trying to better my vocals, there was never really a reason for it to get better quicker. It just over time and years and stuff, it just subtly on its own got a little bit better. And like I said, I guess I didn't really think about it until now that that's kind of how it went. That, you know, yeah, you're right. If it weren't for that video, I probably wouldn't watch those videos back today until then. So I think you discovered that, and I didn't this, so...
Cool.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've never had a reason to, like, pinpoint, like, the worst show I've ever played until now of, like, did I learn anything from that, realistically? Yeah. Yes, I was embarrassed, but I guess I didn't know until you said that it embarrassed me enough to learn until now.
Sure.
So, cool.
Well, I think... That is pretty cool. I didn't plan on that happening, but cool.
This is therapy. Nice. This is cool.
Well, I think about it like that. I mean, you watched the video, and obviously, you know, it led to you, you know, kind of, we'll call it watching tape, I guess, of, you know, shows where you kind of see what's good, what's not. You kind of figure it out. I guess in that same sense, maybe, I don't know how I'm trying to explain it here. But maybe, I guess, watching it was what you needed to do to become a better musician, I guess, maybe, in that sense. Like, even if you didn't realize it, like, oh, I still am trying to get better. You know, does that make sense, I guess? I don't know. I had another point, and I lost it in the middle of that discussion. I'm a little bit off today. Bear with me.
No, you're nailing it, man.
Thank you. So I guess tell me a little bit about the first show that you played up here then, and what compare it to maybe what that show was like, where you have a little more confidence and you're kind of getting a feel for the scene. Tell me a little bit about your first show up here.
Do you remember Seven Steps Up is in Granite?
Yeah, I think it's like Spring Lake area.
Yeah. So that was the first show up here. So, when I first got here, yeah, I was just trying to busk around and see if I could find people to play with. And then that's when I found that flyer at Firehouse that had Nate's information on it. And I was actually just talking about this flyer yesterday because the flyer he had, it had, you know, the tassel thing on it. But, like, it had, like, the most Microsoft Word stereotypical font on it that he just like did like it, I mean, it looked like Wingdings font might have been right underneath that as an option or something. It was so stereotypical, and it had the old Microsoft Computer Painter program guitar on it. It was the most stereotypical metal guitar. Mm-hmm. So I also thought this was going to be like a heavier group because I came up here thinking that I could bring my band from down there up here, and then they just didn't, and understandably so, could not do that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to still transition from like a metal band to a metal band, seeing the most stereotypical BC Rich looking guitar on there. Like, right. I thought it's going to be a metal band. So when I contacted Nate, and then he took a couple weeks to get back to me, and as I recall, because this was years and years ago, but like I think he told me that like he was playing hard to get, maybe a little bit, which kind of a smart move, but it's funny. Just thought like he made me wait that long because he's very punctual and very professional. So I still wonder why he took so long to get back to me. Anyway, yeah, he said that we're looking for a bass player and a drummer, and so I thought it was two guitar players. One of them was a singer. And when I get there, it's like in the living room, and it's a really, really nice house. It's the singer's house, and there's like a fire going, and it's not metal whatsoever. Nate has a metal guitar, and then the singer has an acoustic guitar, and they're doing that shit. And no, I don't even know what the genre is. It not metal, not metal at all. It was like, because he wanted to do, the singer wanted to do Coldplay, Nate wanted to do like Metallica and stuff, and then I was kind of on board with the Metallica thing, but then when you try to mix that in with like all this acoustic-y stuff, it was just three opinions getting slammed into each other. And so they still wanted to go and do a gig at Seven Steps Up, so this being the first gig up here, no drummer, and like I have like my bass strapped low, and I have like Cliff Burton's little pedal set up, you know, with a fuzz and a wah pedal. Hmm. And we're just trying to incorporate all this on, like, and then, like, Nate's, and then I'm over there trying to, like, just slam the bass as hard as I can, because I wanted to be cool, and it, and no drummer. The fuck is going on? You know, like, it was so uncomfortable, and then one of their house drummers got up there, and it's just a really old dude. No, it wasn't an old dude. It Brad Huseman. Really, really nice guy. Not an old dude. And then he just tried to improv. This is all like the long way of saying that that gig also really sucked, and I gained no perspective from that, actually. that just was a bad gig.
Right.
And then, yet we still continued. I mean, I guess we talked more and more of like, hey, can we fuse these ideas a little bit more cohesively? Because nobody wants to hear like Megadeth under Frank Sinatra. That's weird. So
it sounds interesting hearing it described like that. I'm like,
I would be
I would check it out.
Yeah, garbage, man. You would think it would be just like, oh, that'd be good for like a laugh, like a TikTok remix or something. Sure. No, it was just sandpaper against a can, dude. It was so bad.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the reaction that I had. But okay, we got another 30 minutes to go. So,
right.
Yeesh. Yeah. No drummer. Like, why would we do that?
Right. Well, I think that seems like a good gig to learn something from. Even if you say you didn't get any perspective, I mean, hearing you say it like that, I mean, to me, I would have, if I'm like hearing it then and I'm saying, oh, we need a drummer, then to me that says, oh, let's go find ourselves a drummer. Maybe we don't play another gig like this until we have like somebody kind of keeping it tight, you know, behind the kit.
Sure. I mostly meant like longevity perspective with anything. Sure. Yeah, we definitely had the thought of like we probably should go get a drummer and not do that, any of that again. And yeah, embarrassment usually will lead to like betterment. Just why are you embarrassed, you know, if you don't like what you just did? So
yeah.
I won't do that again.
and that actually reminded me of the other point that I was going to make. And so we might need to edit this because the flow, the general flow is going to be a little off. So, but
raw.
Imagine seeing that video and then having it like make you shift into a mindset where, oh, I'm never going to do that again.
Mm.
You know, like I think there's something to be said that maybe in that moment you watch that video and you can sort of say, oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, I don't want to do that. But you could have also said, oh, that was bad. I'm never going to play music again. I think that's something to think about too. Cause I've seen videos of like my bands playing where, yeah, I thought we rocked it and then it just sounds bad. And I'm like, oh, I can't go on stage ever again. This is what we sounded like. Mm. We can't live that down. And then you kind of realize, oh, maybe it's not that big a deal. Nobody probably really cares that we didn't sound that bad or that we sounded bad at that show, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think about that. Do you think, oh, what if I had stopped playing music because of that? You know, I guess maybe you haven't because you hadn't thought about the other thing that I asked you about. So I don't want to keep asking you if you have thought about these things.
No, and it's super fun because you're like getting into it. It's like, and we're analyzing it. I think it's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just like, to me, that's like, I'm thinking about that now and I'm like, oh, you could have just said, oh, well, hell with this music thing. I'm not going to do this anymore. Let me find something else that will be better. You know, like, I think that might be important to think about for times like that, especially now today, where you might have a gig that was bad, or if you can't play a song right, or you can't figure out where to go with the song, there's like that perspective that, oh, I was once in this spot. You know, and now look at where I am now. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. In retrospect, all of my gigs since then are bad. They're just this much better.
Sure.
Which is fine because, I mean, that I don't know if I ever realistically want a 100%, like, I know I nailed that show, because that's too much pressure. Because then you'll want it again,
right?
And that's just too much. Like, it takes the fun away of, like, driving all these miles and setting all this crap up and having the opinions of all these people and how they're feeling that day and stuff. I mean, you want anything you can shave off pressure-wise, I'm going to go that route. So you're right. There is still perspective to be gained even from that hawk of crap that, you know, that was. So,
do you think that maybe the thing about being a good musician is understanding that you're your own worst critic, in a sense? Like I almost think, yeah, you don't, like, if you had the perfect show, I guess that just seems like what does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, what is the perfect show? If we ever found that out, it seems like music just wouldn't be fun anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, again, that's also a mental thing. I mean, you could think you played the perfect show, but then your keyboardist or drummer will say the opposite or something. I mean, it's just impossible. But then trying to strive for that is mentally exhausting to think about. Same thing with perfectionists in music, with sitting down and trying to record your new album. That is the most, and there's plenty of them around here, that is the most dangerous thing. I hate it. I honestly hate perfectionists to that extent of, like, please stop. Because I think even if you did somehow find this perfection that's in it, or get that little nitpicky thing, you're going to ruin my album with doing that, or you're going to ruin your own album with doing it. There's just too much pressure with stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that you always hear the same cliche, right, with recordings, that those recordings that sound maybe that, like, not as produced are better. Have you ever heard people say that, where I like that it doesn't sound produced? And I don't necessarily think I vibe with that all that well. I guess it maybe depends on the project or the band or something like that.
The genre, for sure.
Yeah, because you can definitely get within a vibe if maybe you're not striving for that perfection, like you say. But I think there's such a weird thing with recording, right? Because, like, I don't know if a song is ever really done, in a sense. Like, I play songs all the time that have been written for years, and I'll play something different. I'll be like, oh damn, why didn't I write it like that? Maybe I'll play it like that from now on, you know? So I think we leave songs, you know, we don't put a period at the end of it. We leave them open, so in case we hear something a little different some other time, or, you know, you don't know how your style is going to change, your style of play, where you might write a part and play it the same way for 5-6 years, and then year 7 you're like, oh, no, that's not what this song sounds like anymore. This is what it's going to sound like now, because you hear it a different way.
Right.
You know, do you find that when you're writing songs that you kind of leave it to that, where you kind of leave the door open for change, or, like, where you're not so worried about playing it that same way every time? Like, if you maybe play the wrong note and it leads you to playing other notes, do you kind of sink into it and see where it goes? Or are you kind of like, nope, this is how I wrote it, I need to play it like this?
Kind of a loaded question, because whenever I record, I don't have any of it mapped out. I just know I want to record right now.
Sure.
So, yeah, your feeling towards a song could change on a daily basis, because I've written songs when I've drank coffee, and then others when I'm drinking beer. And it's a completely different, like, vibe when it's like, oh, I just woke up and I had my coffee, now I have energy, I want to hit it this way. Or, holy shit, it's really, it's like 3 a.m. and I'm a little drunk and I still want to record to get something done, just see what happens. And you can hate it later. But I never, like, any of these songs on the new album, like, they were all written, like, in that go. Not one go by any means. No, fuck that. But they were just written without a plan, realistically, because I don't know if I'm patient enough, which is, like, the worst thing to say as a musician, but it's fun that way, you know, and you get some pretty cool stuff when you kind of branch out, like, doing it your way,
right?
At least I think you got to be confident about some of your stuff, but it I can't sit down and, like, okay, we go to this chord, and then, like, okay, that lyric's working really good right there, and then, you know, so it, It's just better to be at the computer and just like, I'm angry right now. I'm sleepy right now. I'm very hungry. I think this coffee wrote this riff, and coffee has written a ton of the riffs. It's amazing. Yeah. And then you just sort of like, because I'll have like a Primus day, and I'm like, I'll just kind of like trickle in like something to that effect, something weird here, and like go get the remote control and just slam it against stuff and see what happens. I don't know, like, keeping it as simple as possible always trumps the complicated, mm-hmm. it, musically speaking. And again, it's like that video game thing I said where, like, people get on to you for leaving the difficulty at very easy and they beat it on hard. Well, whoop-de-doo. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that it worked out that way, but you're judging me when my music works. You know, clearly, if you mm-hmm. have an audience, it's working in some way or another. And I did this on very easy. If I can find any way to take the pressure off and just do this my way in an already pressure-filled job, it's even enough pressure just making it a job. So just stop, I guess. But, yeah, keeping everything as simple as possible is the... Was that even what you asked? I think I went on a tangent.
No, I think you're... Yeah, you're making the... point of
what little
it's okay to go on tangents too. Yeah. Sometimes I'll start a question knowing where I want it to go and then it goes in a completely different direction and I'm like, oh, that works too.
Mm.
And yeah, if
you
we
eventually
get
to where you need to
be. Yeah. This is that's what this is about. It's all a conversation. It doesn't have to, you know, we can go off on a tangent. It don't matter to us. So.
Stick to the script. Dude.
Word.
Yeah. What script?
The whole thing's just a big RPG, like mm-hmm. it just starting from level one and going up, and then you get this experience from this guy, and then you die this many times to this guy. But with the confidence thing, even, you know, same thing with a video game metaphor is like you could take that route and like, oh, OK, I got shot multiple times in Call of Duty or some just pick a game and just, OK, I hate this game. I absolutely hate this game. I played it for one day. The same thing, you know, like it, you're gonna want to keep playing, like you got that little itch, like mm-hmm. Okay, I know to not play against people that are level 100 when I'm level one. I'm gonna go do this thing to get like a better gun or a better weapon or something like that and just go forward. It, I mean, Jesus, I would hate to have that mentality because like I wouldn't play any video games.
Tell me a little bit about when you write songs, how much of it do you think is you writing as like a therapy? Maybe you're putting your feelings, like your thoughts into the songs, or do you just like how much of it is fun? How much of it is because you need to, and how much of it is for yourself versus like when you play it live, are you playing it on stage because it's your passion and you want to, or are you playing it because you want to maybe reach something within the people watching you? Does that make sense?
Yes. This is going back to the perspective thing. Before, I wanted it to reach people because you do in some way or another. After a while, nope. Kind of, you had to, that was another little thing I could take off the pressure list is that, and I'm sure a lot of people say that, no, I play for me now, but I do because it's less pressure. Mm-hmm. And then when I said like there is a genre for everybody, there are lyrics for everybody. There's like their way of interpreting it. And if it reaches you, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I also try to make my songs based around a funny scenario or something like that, because I don't want the deep, dark connection that got rooted with like, okay, this helped me get past a problem. If it does, I'm super happy. But, like, mm-hmm. I don't want it done in, like, a sad song way. I want it done in, like, a super energetic way. I want it done, like, this kind of thing. But that's just not the goal anymore. It's like, I thought this song was funny to me or was really fun to play. And, yes, to answer that first question, there are definitely days where I have to write. I need to get up there and do something. Mm-hmm. But it's still going to be based off of, like, do I want to drink beer for this or do I want to drink coffee for this? Do I need to take a nap first? Should I do this on an empty stomach to get like more impatient or something? Mm-hmm. I still try to do everything in a selfish manner. I wish I could pick a different word that didn't sound so negative, but that really is what it is that I do need to be doing this more for myself, to where it is fun and I get paid for it to be fun. Because I still want this to be my job. I have a passion for this to be my job. I have a passion to write music, but taking away what I think people are expecting out of me and throwing it in the direction of what I really have been wanting to do all this time has made a vast improvement on like what I get out of all of this. Is there, even if I had a say in bands where everybody's opinions were colliding, you still never felt as successful in there. There was always like something in the back of my head that, you know, this isn't obviously the way you want it to be. And that's how it is in a band for sure. But like, that's why I started trying to do my own thing completely with this new project. And it's really worked out mentally anyway, is that I feel a lot better. And I still have that band unit of help too. Like they still write on top of my stuff and my layers and, you know, but the pressure's gone. You know, like I enjoy every single one of my shows. I am not anxious driving to them anymore or singing them, or even if I screw up a lyric or do this thing wrong, it's so much, this is the easiest band I've ever been in, and like it is physically the hardest band I've ever been in, and that's great comparatively.
I see, and I like the fact that you used the word selfish. It might have, you know, maybe a slight negative connotation to it, but I think you have to be a little selfish if you want this to be the thing that you do. You know, if this is going to be what your career is, you kind of have to put that first in some ways. Like obviously, like I have a job that I would, I don't know, it's just a job. I don't know if I'd consider it a career. But it's what I choose to spend my time doing that allows me to do, you know, the other things in my life that I'm passionate about. For you to have something that you're passionate about, but also to make it a job, you are going to have to be selfish at times. And you are going to have to, like, be in control of that thing that is yours. You know what I mean? Like, that to me, I don't see anything wrong with being selfish. Not to say that you think there was anything wrong with it either, but
I got you.
But I like that you use that word, because I think it's honest. And even if it might sound bad to, you know, someone who isn't in your shoes, doesn't quite get that, like, oh, why would you want to be selfish? Who wants to be selfish? No, I think that's a good mentality to have, because if you're not selfish, people can take advantage of you, or people can, you know, I think people can see that selfishness and see it's more on the determination side rather, I guess. But I liked that you used that word. I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the goal, I guess, with this project. Are you still going by Jude Lawley and the Flux? Is that still the project? And I've only seen you guys perform at Unruly that one time, but since then I don't know if it's panned out, because I didn't pay enough attention, but since then, I think I've recommended people to reach out to you guys for shows. I don't know if they have. So
people have, like, have they every been? Week. Cool. It's nutty. So if that's a, thank you for doing that.
Well, because you guys were so fun to watch, and I really enjoyed. And we don't play very often, granted, there was a year and a half pandemic where no one was playing, so that's probably why we weren't playing very often, but. That was one of our first shows back from having been in the pandemic. So for us to kind of get back there, play with our friends in Short Hair, but play with this band we hadn't played with before, and you guys were awesome. Like, that was really great.
Thank you.
Tell me what your goals are going into the rest of this year, what you'd like to see kind of happen, what you want out of this project right now.
The album right now is so close to being done. Like, I have music online right now, but I'm gonna clean house with it and completely take all that stuff off, and it just start with Jude Lawley and the Flux album. That's the first and foremost thing right now, because people seem to be wanting some of this merch that we have, and I'm using that real loosely right now because it's still like an early band, but it's stuff I don't want to sell, because when they come and see the band and they like it enough to buy merch, I'm like, this album is going to sound nothing like that, and I'm concerned about that part of it. The first goal, album, t-shirts would be cool, but we'll see on that one. The goal as a whole, I don't need some hay, I just may. What do you say? Okay. All right. Happy Gilmore. The I want it to be a career. I want this to be my thing. Like, this is the first band that I've ever, like, had any form of leadership over. And I like that it is a unit. Like, I also like that it's one of those, like, older type things. Like, it's so-and-so and the something, you know? Mm. And I got that idea, obviously, from Patty Prashala and the Mayhaps and then Nate Walton and the Remedy, you know, that kind of stuff. So I like that it's still a band unit that it, like, with comfortable people. You know, I have really good friends in the band, and they are really good musicians, and they all, like, Brian Chamgotch has Electric Moon Studios, so he's doing the album, clearly. Yeah. And
shout out to Ryan. When I was in Bad Lipstick, he did some of our recordings, and it was great. I loved that experience.
Yeah.
Recording with him, but sorry.
No. Like, do it. Ryan Chamgotch, Electric Moon Studios. Mm. Camera. It's fun. I know I already said that, but like, it being a band unit, but it's mine and my music, it I don't know if I will ever get this type of comfort again if it were to falter, which again, it's easier for it not to falter because I have control over the situation. Not saying someone won't leave or quit or something like that. But then, you know, if a whole band splits up, you know, one guy can't just carry Sky King further, you know, into anything. It's over. I don't know if I'll ever get this comfort again. So goal being longevity wise is that I want this to be my career for sure. Music in general. But if I can do it with this band, that would be the ultimate goal. The year goal, album, and just play shows out the wazoo. Like, I want to absolutely promote the shit out of this album. So that's as simple as it is,
right?
This year anyway.
Hell,
and
yeah,
hopefully not get more COVID stuff happening, you know, where we can't play at all,
right?
Yeesh.
Now what I'm curious about, and I ask this of everybody that has I call them the and the bands, so I'm glad that you brought it up the way you did, the bands.
Oh yeah.
Because I like to get some perspective on this, just because you use your name, June Lally and the Flux. Mm-hmm. What do you find when you play shows, like, you're up on stage and you're June Lally, these guys are the Flux? How much of June Lally on stage is June Lally off stage? And where do the two meet? Are they the same? Are they different? Do you feel like this Jude Lally has to sort of put on a show, put on a performance? Maybe there's sort of a mask over, like, how you might be off stage. Because to give you an example, I guess, we had Gray Gordon on the show like a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. And he plays under his own name as like a solo project. And so what I tried to get into was, you know, are you the same off and on stage? You know, are people kind of expecting you to be Gray Gordon on stage when you're off stage? Because, you know, people have their off days. I know when I saw Anthony Ranieri from Bayside, I saw him play solo one time. And it must have been an off day. He didn't really want to talk to anybody. He was at his merch table, but he was on the phone, wasn't really talking to anybody. And people were like, what the hell, dude? You know, I paid money to come see you play. I wanted to meet you. I wanted to have this experience. But, like, he wasn't really trying to, you know, offer up those experiences. People kind of forget that he's a real person, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Granted, like, it might be a slightly smaller scale, but how do you try to, like, take the two personas and mesh them into one where you're on stage Jude Lally, off stage Jude Lally? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. There's not a mask. There's autopilot for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to find, and that's always fun when you finally find the autopilot, and you can just sort of, like, even like little moves you might have at this point, because, like, okay, now I don't have to, I can get away from the mic, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing when, like, everybody up front singing, like, backs up away from the mic at the same time. Like, it's just instinctive. Like, you start, like, having those little incidental choreography things you might do. I don't know. I try my best to be as weird as I can be on stage without, like, screwing up my knees. Hmm. Like, that's been a thing recently. Yeah, like, I'm just tired all the time now. And, like, all the time. It, the other guys also, you know, we all do, like, that kind of, like, just neutral bob back and forth, which I don't know. I think it's just because all the stages we're playing on are, like, you know, and you can't, like, go this way or you'll hit that guy or go this way or hit that guy. I don't know. Realistically, I know that I'm not that much different. Sure. I try to be an entertainer to the best that I can be. And I think that I do a good job of it. I try to be funny. I try to be weird. But then, yeah, off stage, and I try to, like, leave immediately. It's not to be rude or salty or anything. I'm just, I pick, like, the wrong profession to do this in. Me and a crowd of people, no mas. Like, that, I can't do it. I'm embarrassed. I'm anxious. I'm very, very uncomfortable being in that type of setting. Obviously, you know, using selfish in the most negative way, you know, like, I love performing in front of a lot of people and, you know, all eyes on what you do. But as soon as I'm done, and I try to stick back and, like, support as much as I can, especially other bands. And generally my guys in my band, whatever band it is, will stay or something like that. But I can't, like, I absolutely cannot. Even if this was in, like, another state, I would immediately go to the hotel or something. So, there's not really another persona to give at all. I mean, there might honestly be, but I think everything's just on autopilot, and I think I'm still the same person I am when I'm on stage, because I don't, all right, you know, like, I don't do any of that shit, so, you know, Brendan does all the talking, nice. So.
Yeah, I get that feeling, too. I used to play with a microphone, and I hated it. I never felt comfortable on stage, but then once you took the microphone away, I started to be so much more comfortable, like you said, sort of an autopilot, kind of. And I think when I get off the stage, I can be there, but I'm definitely not. You would think I was maybe a different person, just because, like, I don't know if I necessarily in a public setting would be like, oh yeah, that person plays on stage. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that. I don't give off that kind of vibe, I guess. But then,
right.
But then when I'm on stage, I'm like, oh, I'm very comfortable right now. I feel like I could do this all day. You know. But I get what you're saying is in terms of, like, I don't think it's really that different, but I definitely, if I was just at the show, I don't think anybody would look at me and say, oh, this guy's playing the gig tonight. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I'm okay with too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there is something about being on stage where you get, especially once you're comfortable, you get into that autopilot for sure, I think. So what, I guess with June Lolly, I don't really remember you guys singing all that much when you guys played. But what? Tell me, like when you do sing in a song, what are your, like you say you try to write something that's funny or some like funny scenario. Can you give me an example of something that you wrote, like, in a song? Just for context, I guess. Can you give me an example something that might have been a little silly or something like that?
There's some serious songs on the album, but I still try to make them in, like, not so much for, like, we're just, like, the music video, we're going to go play in a swamp somewhere. And, yeah, get your guitars. You don't mind getting wet. And, like, I don't know. Like, the Foo Fighters said that, like, dude, our music videos are candy commercials. Like, that's so cool. That's fun. There are still some serious stuff in there, but, like, the rule, unspoken rule that I try to, like, have with this band at least, is that, like, I want for every lyrical song for there to be an instrumental, because they're so much fun to write, you know, especially short ones, not super long, progged out ones or anything, you know, like a 4-minute instrumental. So we've got several instrumentals, several lyrical. There's a funny instrumental, and that's even better, because then you can just name them whatever you want. You know, it doesn't really have to have a reason, but the newest song, it's called Death by Nate's Angle, and it's about our friend's penis. Yeah, that's a fun one. Was that... Not good?
Oh, no. He looked over at me like I thought he was about to, like the way you had your phone angled. Oh, I thought you were going to show me, like, how much time we had or something. Sorry.
I was like, oh, shit. Much. Can I?
I'm all about distracting.
No, we are very much interested to hear about your friend's penis.
Okay, continue. Yeah.
Details.
Cool.
Yeah. The deets.
It bends, so that's why we called it Nate's angle. Nice. So. And because we didn't have a title for the instrumental that wasn't stupid, so we went with that one. There's a lyrical one that the title has nothing to do with the song called Juicer, but that's just talking about my friend's juicer. It has nothing to do with the song. Lyrics have nothing to do with it. The lyrics are super serious, but there's one that I have called Miss Witness that's roughly based off my wife's life, and that's like kind of like dark humor. Kind of sort of thing. It's like super, super roughly based around that. It just things to that nature, but you still make, even if it is darker or sad, like I want it to be fun. Like, I just can't write sad songs. I don't like them. I don't want to hear them. I'm glad that people find a way to listen to music like if I'm sad, I listen to sad music. I don't get it. I understand, but I don't get it. Like, if I'm really sad, I don't want to hear Welcome to the Machine by Pink Floyd. That'll make me more sad. Like, I still want, like, something pumpy, you know? And I'm a super tired person, and I still prefer the music to be, like, 1,000 miles an hour. Like, that's something still I also don't get. The album is called Sundial Sopapilla. That makes no sense. I didn't even know what a sopapilla was until she told me, and that's where I got it from. Right. So, I don't know. There's, like, no reason. There's no reason, and that's the fun part. That's the best part, is that there really is no reason.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, I think that's great, because, why do you even really need a reason at all?
You don't. Yeah. You sometimes don't.
Yeah.
It's fun to have a reason, but overdoing it, I guess, is just another thing I can chalk up to taking the pressure off of a pressure-filled job.
Well, it just kind of shows to me that maybe while taking it seriously, you're not taking it maybe too seriously, you know, where you can relax and it can still be that passion, or you can still put that passion without it being too serious of a thing, you know, which I guess if that makes sense even, I don't know. But I like the idea of that where you could be a little silly about it and still, you know, treat it as a passion that you'd like to make into a career, you know.
Right. And I'm not at all dogging on people that do full seriousness into it. This is just my way of doing it, works for me.
You're putting your own little charm on it, and I think that maybe does more for it than, you know, someone else's charm, I guess. It does more, and I mean that it does more for it for you rather than, like, you know, because your one person's charm is totally different than some other band's or some other act's charm, you know. Like,
right.
So, yeah. That was a tangent, but
No. I can't do stuff off methods anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, cause that just never works. It might work for a little bit, and then it just, like, dude, they got there that way because that's just how they are. And then if that person tells you their method, it's still their method. Like, is it happened in accidentally? It's like when you were talking about the bands that, like, okay, we kind of did this on a shitty recording basis. And then there's the ones that are, like, overly, like, produced and stuff like that. The only reason those were good, like, the ones that are recorded in, like, bad conditions or something like that, is because that's all they had. Like, you know, the people that purposely try to go out and, like, we need to, like, make our studio crappy in order to get, like, the right compression on all of this. And, like, oh, this reverb is so good. Because you made it that way. Like, and it just, and even that doesn't work. If you try to make something sound like shit, you know, because that's what sounded good for this band, it's just gonna sound like shit, you know, like that just doesn't translate that well. Another tangent. Anyway, we can keep going. Sorry.
For sure. Let's get into a little bit of, like, a lightning round.
Ew.
And when I say lightning round, they definitely don't have to be short answer or short form answers. You can absolutely go off on as many tangents as you want. It's a very loosely structured lightning round. Just I always have to preface it like that, because people might, the first answer or so might just be a short one, and then we just get right back into the mix of it. So
sorry,
but no worries, it's expected. Tell me, what do you think is the most important thing you've learned as a musician over your time? Not exactly a lightning round question, I know, but yeah.
Simplicity.
Yeah.
Super. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, like people say, keep it simple, stupid for a reason. You know, it's good advice. You know, don't make anything more than what it needs to be. Don't put too much into the song. I've learned that was a tough one for me because I always wanted to do something cool. I always wanted to noodle around and make it look like I was doing something that was a big deal. But then you kind of learn there's more in the subtlety than there is in trying to do too much. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of songs where the whole song is just that riff. And it worked for 4 minutes. You just never get tired of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just realized how ridiculously repetitive Slow Ride is. Or not Slow Ride, Low Rider.
Either way.
Wow. Like, I didn't know the song was that long, but you just kind of, even if it's annoying at the thought of how repetitive it is, it doesn't actually get old.
Yeah.
There's that Police song, Demolition Man. It's the same thing. The whole time. And it's like a 5-6 minute song. I love when you can just write a simple riff and not have to go to 5 other ones. Like, this riff speaks for itself. That's so cool. That's so cool. Simplicity.
Give me a Jude Lawley and the Flux story that sticks out. Like, one where they're like, oh, tell me a story about that band, and this is your go-to story.
A Jude Lawley and the Flux story?
Yeah.
I crop dust on stage all the time.
Hilarious. Tell me everything.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. There's like this dance that like I do just to show that I'm doing something. And it just came from like I always never hit the bathroom at the right time before going on stage. And that was like, I started doing that just to like, okay, this is how I'm going to like, here, take some more, you know, like kind of it, like just to hold in my pee and my shit.
Sure.
On top of that, like it, yeah, it's not the greatest story in the world because the band's still pretty new, but like that one I have told to them before. And now it's even a little bit more apparent. Like if like Ryan smells something, he knows who to look to, right, kind of thing. It's so bad. I don't regret it.
Oh, you
And no. Sometimes I don't even know when I do it, but like I think it's like medically amazing how much I might almost shit myself on stage, especially in my adult life. Sure. I haven't done it yet. Like, I've shat myself in my adult life, just not on stage yet. So that right now, that's a concern. So at least if I get it out now and it does happen, it's just another thing that might not be as embarrassing if anybody is hearing this story.
Sure.
There you go.
When you come on this podcast the second time, I'm not that I want
you. Have you pooped yet?
Yeah, not that I want you to, but I think it would be funny if I ask you the same question and then the next time you come around, there's a story about how you shit yourself on stage. I just feel like that would be a hilarious part two, like a sequel to this.
Well, that's how we're going to sell stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So if at some point that happens, just let me know. We'll have you come
on again. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No,
I think that's great. And a side note, I think we as a society need to take some pressure off of farting in public. I think it is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was good.
No, sorry.
I didn't even notice I did that. That was great.
That was so sorry.
But I think, yeah, it's ridiculous, right? It's a normal bodily function and you do it all the time. Why does it have to be weird? Why do people have to point it out or like be shitty about it?
I thought when you started this, you were going to say, I think we as a society should poop ourselves. I thought that's what you were about to say.
Yeah, that too. I think we should. There's this idea, right? So there was this guy, I always forget what his name was, but there was a person out there who convinced the world that bad breath and that having body odor was a problem or like a bad thing. So we never used to use deodorant. People always had their natural body odor and everyone was just chill with it. Nobody even really thought anything. And then one day, to bring the idea of like selling deodorant, people were eventually convinced that having body odor was a thing, like, and that it was bad. So you needed to buy these things that would keep you from having body odor. Just ridiculous.
Get rid of toilet paper. Yeah. No bidets. We're done.
Yeah, let people smell like what they smell like. You know, I don't know. I just think it's ridiculous. I think, obviously, hygiene is a good thing. We should probably be clean or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, stop caring when people fart. If somebody shits themselves, don't make a big deal out of it. Like, it happens. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody got a poop right now?
Always got a poop.
Like,
what if we did that? What if as a statement, we all just shit right now at this moment? This is weird.
And they wouldn't know.
We have never, the podcast.
We have never gone on a tangent about shitting. Grunts. This is interesting. This is not how I expected this to
go. We all just get a little inch taller, and that's the only way they know.
Man, I would love that. To get an inch taller?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I was just going to say that.
I would love to. I want to be 5'8". I said that today. Someone said 5'10" for some reason. And I was like, oh, that's the height that I would dream of being. 5'10". Just sounds like the perfect height. I don't know why. It just does. I've been 5'7" most of my life. I'm getting sick of it. So 5'10", I think, would be perfect.
Same.
All right. Anyway, what's a song of yours that's just like your favorite to play? What, like, and why? But what's one song that you just like, you love to play?
Hermit is an instrumental we have right now. I don't know, like that one just, oh, I can feel the pickup. I can just feel, like, I dig in so hard for that riff because a lot of the stuff I do is distortion bass. And, it's so fun starting that riff. Like, and it equally is such a bummer when I know I completely miss the string because I try to, like, add a little bit of, like, flair to it physically. And there's been a couple times where I've, like, and then that's when you turn around like, oh, yeah, I meant to do it and then come back in. But, like, that song is so drivey. Like, I love every riff that's in that song, and there's a ton of them. I think that's realistically all it is to it, is that it's just so pushy from a bass perspective with distortion and stuff like that. Like, it's just, that's the song I've been wanting to do. Like, it's just the what my hands have just been my hand has just been wanting to play that riff forever and just never had gotten a chance to. And it's so good in my opinion. I just love playing it because it's such an aggressive bass song.
Tell me one thing about, well, actually no, scratch that. Say you're talking to a person who is just like, oh, bass, you play bass, what's your elevator pitch to be like, no, bass is cool, and here's why? Like, what would you try to tell somebody who just didn't really understand the bass guitar?
Poop myself. Just stay quiet and poop myself. Because we're in an elevator, right? Yeah, that's... just squint a little and just wait for the heat to rise. I don't know what... Fuck you, I guess. That's a really... Like... Just, bass?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why anyone would be like this, but if somebody were, because it's obviously an instrument you're very passionate about. But
right.
If somebody, you know, was like, oh, why would you play bass? Like, what would be your reason?
The harp's pretty cool. I guess. Because I try to make stuff funny, like, when I'm uncomfortable, so I guess that would be the first, try the bugle, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or... I'm getting out right here. I guess I don't know. Why are you talking to me? I don't have a good answer for that, other than to try to make it funny.
Sure, sure. What places do you hope to play in? I know you mentioned like, oh, I want to play whatever shows I can. Ideally, like, what are your top three cities that you'd like to play a show in?
Somewhere in California would be cool. Somewhere in Portland would be super cool.
Nice.
Oregon, you know, that, I don't even know if there's gotta be something, obviously. It would be cool to play Founders just to get some closure, because we've been just trying to get in there forever.
Right.
But now I don't even know if it's worth a shit to play there. I really don't know. Why is it an arm and a leg to get somebody's phone number to play there? And it's nothing against Founders. It's like the best beer, but like... your venue, man. Like, sucks. Like, to get in there, there's such a hierarchy, I guess, for that kind of thing. I love playing at the Pyramid Scheme. If I can get, and that's another one that's... Does anybody know who to contact for that?
Oh, I could give you some information that you might... We play there all the time.
No.
Not so much. There's a promoter that books there that we tend to play with more often. I think in the times that I've played at the Pyramid Scheme, it's maybe only been twice where it was like a band or the actual like venue throwing the show. It's typically the same promoter that books us, but we'll talk after this. I'll give you some information.
Okay.
I could probably help you out with that too.
That or the intersection would obviously be great.
For sure. I think I haven't dealt with them in a while, but I could probably help you out with that too.
All their information's on their website. Yeah. At the bottom it lists like all the managers and all that shiz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hell yeah. Okay, so I like to ask this question for the end of the lightning round. You are putting together a lineup at one venue. You're the headline, but you have to pick three other bands to play with you. And these are bands that you've worked with in some capacity. Normally we do the band, but since y'all are like a relatively newer band, we'll just say throughout your time in music, you get to pick three other bands that have worked with you in some capacity. Where's the venue that you're playing at, and who are the three other bands on the show?
Ooh. Unruly is still like the comfortable place. So I'd probably still say Unruly, like super packed out. That just sounds so much fun. Our Pyramid Scheme. Which one would you pick out of those two?
That's a tough one because I love Pyramid Scheme's my favorite venue in the state, I guess. But there's just something about playing at Unruly.
I know.
I love playing there. That's a tough one.
If we had like the actual interactive crowd there, so Unruly, then we'll just cycle down to Unruly. Tube Socks for sure. Those like I saw those guys. It was like in January, maybe, or something. You know who I'm talking about. It's that three-piece. Tube Socks, though. Like, wow. That was actually... Like, I love the singer / guitarist. Like, his energy. Like, is super... Just, it seemed like punk rocky, but not, like... And throwing blood everywhere. Like, I don't know. He just had such a cool vibe. He was a super nice guy. Tube Socks. I'd like to... get back into like having another show that has Elijah Russ involved, because like I really 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 like the way that he plays, and so typically anything he's in is good. How many people can you have on the lineup?
One. I think that was two, right? So yeah, you have one more.
You guys want to play?
Sure.
Yeah. Hell no. Yeah. Like, because that's the other part is like, even if we all hated each other's music, not implying that at whatsoever, but like the people that you get along with off stage that you're just so easily, you can easily talk to, like when you said your friend died, like that, you know, that right there, even though, and I'm sorry, but like even with that, like the casual part, or even you saying like, 5'10", I'd really like that height. That's the first dude I'm talking to. Like, cause that's so easy and funny and random in all the right places and stuff. Like, you want that perspective. Like, we all respect each other, we all like each other's music, and we all like can hang out before and after the set, you know, and not be in that click fashion. I love that. I absolutely love that.
Hell yeah. Let's set it up. Let's get that show going. That
would be a hell of a show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Or anywhere, for that matter. Like, get that lineup going.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Way into it. Tell me where people can hear your music, or if you have anything, like, that just in a general sense that you want to promote, tell us where we can find it.
Spotify, iTunes, for the time being. I'm actually going to let my distribution for those albums run out. So you probably got like another month, if that's the case, because I'm trying to clean house with that stuff. Anything from this point forward, though, is I'm going to put it on Bandcamp. I can't make, I'm getting all this, like, no money from these from Spotify. I know that's a broken record, but like that was a bummer. Like that actually got a lot of views on there, or listens and or streams, whatever. And yeah, I get nothing. So I'm gonna be going back to Bandcamp. So from here on out, Bandcamp is where I'm gonna have the stuff. And then the new album that's gonna be coming out in the next month or so, that's gonna be strictly physical. For the first little while.
Sure.
So to have incentive to come out and get the CD, and then it'll be on Bandcamp.
Right on. So. Oh, I feel like I never see anybody do that anymore. Like just only having a physical edition of the music. It's all about the streaming now and being on a playlist or whatever, you know. It's really all about that, it seems like. Cool. Well, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This was great. Loads of fun.
Hell yeah.
This is so fun.
So we always close the show with the guest giving themselves some advice for the future. So if you listen to this in the future, you can get to the end and sort of hear yourself, you know, telling yourself something you might need to hear. So we'll go ahead and close out with yourself giving yourself some advice for the future.
Wipe twice. And always takes naps. Don't ever stop taking naps. And I promise you it'll get better before it gets worse.
Hell yeah.
Wipe twice.
That's nice. All. Hell yeah. Well, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, man.
We appreciate it.
This was so much fun.